Board of Education meeting will now come to order. Mr. Ellis, would you lead us in the pledge?
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Mrs. Decker, please call the roll.
Mr. Ellis?
Here.
Here.
Mr. Bonder?
Here.
Smith?
Here.
Howard?
Here.
Here.
Here. Are there any members of the public present who wish to address the board at this time? Seeing none. Presentations, reports, and initiative updates.
This is our annual achievement presentation, and Karen will move you through the slides with an explanation of our current performance.
Is there, what is an 89 versus an 87 in this
one point significant, or is that, it's two, like it's 3 points, one question?
Potentially. I mean, we had an interesting conversation, and just looking at kind of with Clayton Graham on Monday and Dan Deeply there too, and kind of gives you a very different view of what it could mean, because it even changes by grade level. It could be one question in one grade level and three questions in another grade level.
So, realistically, you know, if you do an 87 one year and a 91, pretty much the same. It's not, that's not statistically like, oh my God, something's happened.
Yeah, especially around 5 or 6 points, we really haven't thought that, you know, we need to be concerned. Because again, you know, for the most part, you're typically assessing the same kids from year to year, especially when you look at that cohort. But we have kids who kind of move in and out. Mm-hmm. We know that kids who are new to the country do not have to take the reading test the first year, but they have to take the math test their very first year. So you have kids who essentially cannot read English and are given, you know, a math test. So.
And Karen, there's no accommodation for that? They can't be read the test?
They
or
can.
They can, okay.
You know,
but they still have to do the work.
They would still have to do the work. For some of our kids who, you know, haven't even had a whole lot of formal schooling, to be given a 7th grade math test, you know, even when it's read to them. And, you know, for our Spanish-speaking kids, you can get the Spanish version. Mm-hmm. And what we found with that, though, once you use that, you can't try any other accommodation. So then they have to be reading it independently. So we try to make the best decision when we select which one kind of makes the most sense for them. And here's just the performance that we see in reading. And again, so it's 45 or more kids, so we'll have subgroups district-wide no matter what. The red line there is the subgroup target, the same target for everybody, for this past year. And then where that new target is the green line. And that, I will mention here, too, that we did some curriculum work this year in the area with our DLL kids. Why I see the greater discrepancy with our DLL, although it popped up again at 7th grade, you have to kind of look at the kids who took the test that year. But what we did with the curriculum work this summer is we wrote the curriculum using science and social studies concepts that would be taught through literacy. And so we asked at the elementary level for them to kind of take a look at their schedule and give us a very specific time of day. And it's their science and social studies time that now our LEP kids won't be participating in class with. Because what we were finding is that, depending on the building, the kids were missing portions of their literacy or math block to go get their ELL service. And we said, you know, they need to be there for the entire core curriculum. And they're just trying to kind of figure out the schedule that would best meet their needs. And, you know, Katie sat down with the principals and said, when you build your schedule, I need a good solid block of time. And we found some of their times have been split and that. So it caused some angst, kind of tightening up that schedule for everybody. Mm-hmm. But we wanted to ensure that they had first, best core instruction with their general education teacher and with their kids that support. Now, some of them are still getting intervention from a reading assistant, and we're starting to do some things in the area of math so that they can get that extra help, but they still get very specific ELL time with that targeted curriculum.
So the LEP is ELL?
The ELL, yeah, limited English proficient. And then our IEP kids are another area.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
If you drew the line on the subgroup, if I drew it just on the ISAT reading, based on this law, which I think is crazy, you know, we would be failing No Child Left Behind for 3rd, 4th, 5th, 7th grades, right?
Mm-hmm.
So,
actually,
yeah, we're
for
below.
LEP,
no. For just back to the whole school meets and exceeds. Am I interpreting that correctly? If you drew that 92% bar across there, like you did for the subgroup,
for next year,
for next year,
we would be based on these results.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, probably. That's the correct way to interpret it.
Right, because your current sixth graders are there, who are now seventh graders, right.
Okay. I just want to make sure that that was.
And then with our IEP subgroup, which is the black line there in reading, one of the things we did this summer, too, was we tried to, we did kind of tighten up our MIP curriculum. GIP is more focused and controlled by case. And then we began to identify some interventions that we would like them to, to start using that would target specific areas. But a bigger component of that that we've been more concerned about is really the progress monitoring around our special ed kids. We need to do that, but it's also a way for us to say, is what we are doing working and closing that achievement gap as well.
Karen, are you expecting with the shifts that you said they made in scheduling for the our limited English proficient students to be advantaged by that? So we should see them assessed at a higher level because they're getting that core learning. So we're going to follow that.
Definitely. And we have their access data. It's so hard to kind of do that kind of access update here. But that's another data point that we can look at to make sure that they're making growth in acquiring English language. And the reason why, at some of these grade levels, again, you have to see which are your kids who might be coming in. But why third grade potentially could be very low is because you have kids who haven't had DLL instruction as many years as kids have been in the program longer.
Mm-hmm.
This is, our bilingual kids are part of this group and are bilingual third grade in that, and so they've had a lot of instruction in their native language, and now the test is going to be all in English. So, but yeah, we'll definitely be monitoring that from a curriculum implementation perspective as well.
How do you go about determining bilingual?
It's a federal guideline.
It's poverty guidelines, John. I mean, it's set by the government every year.
But how do you, when I'm taking the ISAT, I bubble in on low income?
No, that's all generated through the database that's connected from our student information system that interfaces with the state.
Which is self-identification.
Yeah.
So we could have more low-income families that may not report, but when they register, they report. So we use the free and reduced lunch figures for that.
Okay, so that's where you're getting
So this is that ISAT performance just in reading compared to the district scorecard target. So the target is really the black bar there. The red line is that MCLE target. And these were 3-year targets.
CIT altered them last year. They made some changes in reading only. I don't think we changed the math targets at all, but the reading ones, you'll see, previous to that, I think they were all at 97.
Right.
And we went back and looked at how realistic those targets were and made some adjustments.
Sixth grade was very cool. Now we switch to math. You'll notice when you go back and look, we actually have more kids in academic learning, even though overall our math scores are higher. My guess is just this is the test where all the kids are taking it. They're not given that kind of pass for a year. So we see a few more in math, but overall, if you look at that 2011 third grade math score in a C, 70% of the kids fell into that category, which we are pleased with. We know that goes down a little bit. That's not unlike what our other area schools see as well.
Karen, it'll be fourth grade. I was going to say, because isn't our third grade group the group that has had everyday math, but it's not. It'll be, my daughter had it in first grade and she was in third grade last year, so they've had, but it won't be, it'll be the group. She was a pilot class, so it'll be
this year.
This year's group of third graders. So it'll be an interesting, just to see mm-hmm. if there's a connection, because mm-hmm. I would say that even though that third grade class was a pilot for first grade, they had it for both second and third, and had a good mentee number. Mm-hmm. Sorry. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Good point. Good observation.
Mm-hmm. On the last column, the new church is in its state, just the state average. Is the state target. So we, on your 2011 math, our meets and exceeds for our district was 92.
Right, and at the state it was 87%.
That's for both. That's average for the state. Mm-hmm. These numbers for the state seem higher than previous years.
They've probably adjusted something.
they tend to do.
Yeah, this makes me very suspicious.
Okay. So here's really that same information represented slightly different. And if you look at your kind of your third, fifth, and seventh, where you see that little bit of a dip, we saw it with those kids in reading as well. And they are the same kids, but it's kind of in both areas. But overall, I mean, our math scores are strong.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so this one we would be okay with in terms of next year.
Correct. 92.5.
Yeah, that last year's fifth grader had them a little bit, but we would be okay. Yeah.
And I noticed in the habit scores is that it always seemed to be that gap for many years between, you know, sixth would be high, and then there were the sixth and seventh and eighth grade, and this. Even though there's a little bit of a dip, it doesn't seem as drastic as it has been in the past.
Right.
Eighth graders have been strong. We've yeah. seen mm-hmm. some good strength in the eighth grade, mm-hmm. the exit year.
I still felt though in seventh and eighth grade, there was a flip.
Between
those that go from exceed to meet.
Right.
I still seventh and eighth grade still seem problematic.
And Nancy, we talked about this with Nancy a little bit, and she was going to try to get some comparison data. I usually can get all of the feeder schools into REST. I usually have that by now, but for some reason it's still being passed around to get the data imported. Mm-hmm. So that would be, but that is something that we try to look at often. Historically, we've done well in comparison to them. I mean, they're similar. They see those dips around the same point in time, but overall,
yeah, we've discussed it before. Mike, you know, when you start getting into the geometry and calculus and things like that, maybe it's just the subject becomes very complex and it's not very good. Mm-hmm.
Right. Or if you have kids, you know, they may not have had.
They haven't had that yet.
Right. Either, and it's right. not kind of what they're currently working on.
What do you say? We need to raise our eighth grade calculus. No, the state does that
for us. So here's your cohort data. Again, this current sixth grade group here, which was in our last year's fifth graders. About that little dip there. But again, you know, not huge. Probably more flat would probably be a better way
And there's for cohorts, Karen, is there any typical, as you've seen in the data, any typical, you know, either plateauing or dip or rise depending on how that cohort has moved through the system? So if it's a group of kids that have been together and we don't have a lot of mobility in the group, et cetera, then they're going to stay relatively strong.
Right. Or, yeah, continue to, you know, we want to see them. To grow, mm-hmm. keep reaching up toward that very lofty 100% goal. But at least you want to remain stable over time, but be able to increase.
Right. Because I'm thinking fifth to sixth grade transition, where we know there's a lot of, you know, change incorporated. I wondered if that just, you know, statewide or even nationally, you see a drop, and then you expect that to level set once they're in the school.
And that is kind of typical, although we have seen sometimes where our sixth graders have really done quite well.
Well, our sixth graders on math, I'll have to look in here again, but I thought our sixth graders on math did reach their growth targets.
I think that was
more.
I was
at. I'll just wait till we get to the math data.
Because if you notice, like with the math, with the ISAT tests in fifth grade, they don't look as good, but on mm-hmm. the math, I think they're the ones who have exceeded what their growth target was, which I think is a great thing, too. Mm-hmm. Here is science. You know, nothing significant at seventh grade. It's like just a fourth, and honestly, with the amount of time we dedicate towards literacy and math, not a big surprise. But this is also one of the reasons why, you know, Ann talked briefly during finance around kind of that same take and really just kind of exploring what are we going to do about STEM and what can we do. And so that group has started and is really starting to what it might be. And it worries me that, you know, now we're going to use some of that time with our ELL kids, but you only have so many hours in the day. And so, you know, we're going to use the content of science and social studies, but they're not going to, you know, get that same exposure. So it's a trade-off. And you've got to take the time from somewhere. And kind of what we started to. But, you know, I'm hoping that through the work of that think tank group that we'll really start to kind of, you know, how can we integrate maximize the amount of time we do have, you know, how might that day look a little different?
I missed the point on this.
I was talking a little bit about this yet, that in fourth grade with our science course.
And you're saying that's because we have started to take some time away from science and put more into literacy and math?
Well, I think what we've gotten really tight on the past few years is these dedicated blocks of time to literacy and math. And, you know, not as much time has been devoted to science and social studies. Social studies, I think, is integrated more easily into the literacy block, and that's what a lot of the teachers are doing. But, you know, for science, and you know, it's tough to kind of do a lot of those hands-on things, you know, to shut everything down, pull it all out. Some of our rooms aren't, you know, equipped that well to kind of do that in a short period of time. And some of our grade levels are getting very creative in trying to use some of these, like, sip days to really kind of rotate kids through some of these nice hands-on science lessons and that, but that doesn't happen often enough. So it is an area where I think with the emphasis on STEM and just knowing where we want to get our kids, that we'll look at more closely.
So what's the time difference that we allocate to science from 2008 to 2011?
You know, I honestly, I'd have to say it would probably depend by building, but you probably saw more of like 45-minute blocks of time down to about 30-minute blocks of time. We've also added targeted learning time in there at the elementary level, so that was another competing.
That's similar in middle school too, then?
No, middle school has not.
That has not changed.
No.
They got their 45 minutes, or is that what it is?
Yeah. And I would say with middle school, you've seen through some of the core extensions an opportunity when kids have had that rotation to go deeper in some of the areas with the forensics and even engineering and things like that as well. So, and again, here's that subgroup performance. It looks a little bit better than it did in literacy, although we're worried about grade 7 there. Again, with our LEP, which is our ELL kids and that. So the red line was this year's target. So you see some of those groups who met it, and then the target for next year. So from a subgroup perspective, obviously we would still be concerned about all of them. If you look at some of those low-income lines that are pretty close to reaching it, it's kind of more random, I would say. Our IEP kids were strong at third and fourth grade. We saw that dip then at fifth, and then it goes on. I do think it's easier to keep them connected to the gen ed curriculum, but as that curriculum starts to ratchet things up, it gets more difficult for the kids to kind of keep hanging in there. So, and again, we're looking at kind of some of the materials. Dean and I have talked about kind of more of those targeted interventions at that as well.
Do we even understand, what is our low-income population? Is it 10%, 15%?
I think it's 13%.
14%, yeah. Which is almost doubled what it was 5 years ago.
What do we have? Just to build on that, you know how we had the second year low income at Churchill? We did not meet targets for 2 years in a row. I guess I don't. Where do we see that? Do we ever see that in here? So we can see what's next or what the next is?
Well, we don't provide you with individual building overviews when we give you this report. When you look at their school improvement plans, you are able to see, you know, their individual student data. But so this is an aggregate of all of our students in the district.
Right.
So we would know that. I mean, our most challenging subgroups right now are our LEP students and our low-income students, followed by our special education students.
Now, do we find that out then again, like 4 weeks before school starts or 6 weeks?
Oh, are you talking about choice?
Yeah, like
oh,
that.
Oh, I see.
We found that out, and it was based on the subgroups.
Mm-hmm.
At, you know, it was large enough Title I certain school. This information now, you're saying we don't know that yet? We just have aggregate data? Right.
Well, this is last year's data. So that's the data that was made to determine choice for this year. Next year we'll have the data probably in preliminary data in May. We'll be able to do an earlier notification because we know either way you have to have 2 years of making adequate yearly progress in all subgroups.
But you don't get that data until
the end of May if we're lucky.
When does the state roll out on the report card in general with all
October 31st.
And that's the IRRC website to be updated. I mean, and then you can go into there and pull out schools and
right.
all this data. In there.
Right. But I think you were asking the choice question, and that data will be late spring next year.
But if you got it this year in August, right?
Well, we got preliminary data in May, and then we've got our final data at the end of July, I think.
The other thing, though, that the state uses is the thing that they call Safe Harbor. So, you know, the third grade kids here aren't going to have to jump to there. There's some, like, what I would call
magical number.
I'm not sure how they ever reach it. And it's not explained quite well. Where sometimes we didn't think we were they're going to make it, and we ended up making it through Safe Harbor. I mean, I can't imagine.
It's like a 10% increase. Calculation against what you had to make, it is a magic calculation.
Yeah, it is. So, and that sometimes can make it the government for us. So. And again, the ICAT performance of math versus the district scorecard, that red light is the target. And again, these are just the numbers. You can see that sixth grade group is very close. That eighth grade group is right there. Same with fourth grade. We're close to those targets. So now we're going to switch to our math data. And this is exactly what we would expect to see as kind of overall the higher risk scores at the upper end and that little bit of growth. This is when you look at the first grade group, they've got some potential, some good growth. It's kind of steady or just marginal in some of those other data points. And again, you're not looking at cohort, just kind of overall the math median risk kind of for the last 3 years.
This isn't the, what's the term used for this? This 229 is what?
A RIT score?
A RIT.
RIT. Those are those equal interval units that, you know, a 220 is a 220, no matter what grade you're in, is kind of what you know and are able to do.
Karen, is this reflective of fall math or spring math?
This is fall.
This is fall.
Okay.
So our fall each year. So here we have the math growth and reading from fall to spring versus that district scorecard. So the last bottom is the district scorecard, and then the other two, the fall to spring scores, would have been the first bar is spring of 2010, and then the second one is the spring of
2011.
So, I'm sorry, what's my risk score to meet versus exceed?
We don't, there's not a RIT score to meet or exceed.
And this is, so they're growth.
This, yeah, the slide you're looking at now shows how what percentage of students met their growth target. And on our district scorecard, we have a target percentage. And this just demonstrates how close individual grade levels were to meeting their growth target.
And their growth target is determined by
their
NWA. Yeah, right, by their individual test score.
Right, and that's all norms, right?
Yeah.
And this is what I found interesting, because here's fifth grade, and if you look, this was the target we had set, and look at how that group really exceeded that target, and yet on the ISAT, we were a little bit more concerned about that group. I just think it's an interesting way of looking at it. Our second grade group, I know an issue that came up when we were at CIT, a lot of the reports they were really concerned about, a lot of our just second grade groups at each of the buildings, and put kind of a lot of interventions in place, things like that. I will tell you that all of these growth targets exceed what NWA sees as pretty typical growth. They're kind of about 50% of the kids should meet their growth target. So in many respects, the fact that we focus on it, I think, it plays a greater role. But
this essentially says that 30%+ of the kids do not meet their growth target of those courses.
Correct.
But what it doesn't tell you too is, they may have missed it by a point. You don't really know that. One of the big changes that we will see this year between the 2008 norms and now the 2011 norms is that the growth targets for all kids will become very similar. They removed the outliers in their norm studies. They also added additional questions at the higher end to kind of further differentiate for some of those kids. So, and a perfect example, I got an email from Scott over the weekend who said, all of our fifth graders' like growth targets are now 8 or 9 points. How can that be? Because in the past, kids at the low end had a really large growth target, and the kids at the high end had a small growth target. Well, in the norm study, by removing the outliers, the kids who finished the test under 15 minutes had unusually low scores or unusually high scores for kids at that grade in a RIT band have been pulled out. So now those growth targets are flatter because they're assuming every child should grow about a year. A year's growth, not grade level. So a child that a 199 needs to grow about 9 points, that would be about a year's growth. A child that 223, which is already at that grade level, would grow about a year's growth. It puts them into the next grade level's RIT band. So it is a little confusing. And as they're setting growth targets with their kids, I just met with a fourth grade team at Churchill today, and I said, you really need to look at those kids who are below what you would want kids to be. At fourth grade is your RIT band, and you need to ratchet up those growth targets to close the achievement gap, because growing a year isn't going to do it. They're going to have to grow a little bit more.
If I just took your math at a high level, it seems that from fourth grade on, they're growing at half a year on average.
A growth target is not necessarily just a year's worth of growth. It's where would we expect you to be if you're already at the high end of the RIT band? What would we expect you to do in the next year, which may be a smaller segment of growth
I'm not looking at the target. I'm looking at...
Just growth?
Yeah, the growth curve, right? So if I went from 215 to 19, you know, as a group, I know it's not a cohort, but, you know, 85% of kids are the same. It seems like fourth grade on, we're growing at a clip of half a year on average.
He's looking at the median RIT score, which I
16.
I don't think that you can calculate that from 215 to 222, say, or 220, is a half a year or not a half a year. It's the median.
Yeah, this isn't really about growth. This is just that median RIT score of all the kids we have at that grade level.
No, I think I get that, but if you take fourth grade at 210, and then you take fifth grade at 215, right, and then you go 215 to 220 and 220, 225, you sort of see a growth of, based on, you know, if you're saying you got to grow.
But those numbers don't represent years.
Yeah.
It's a score.
Yeah, it's a score of fourth grade.
Well,
I'm not going to sit for this.
Let's just say 215 is the 50th percentile for an average for fifth graders or whatever. This being the median, you're going to have our kids who are above that and have the kids who are below that, though, too.
Yeah.
It's the midpoint. Yeah. Is it a good thing that they've
recalculated
the target norms? Good, bad, indifferent?
Well, that's where they saw their huge discrepancies was at first and second grade. And so they kind of, you know, it'll be captured in the letter that will accompany the MAP results. But by removing those outliers, and one of the most significant differences is in this new norming sample, they included thousands and thousands of more first graders than they did in the first one. And so that's where we saw kind of the biggest change. The other thing with second grade is you have some districts who have their second graders take the MAP, the primary test, and other districts who have them take the regular MAP test for grades 2 through 5. Our kids take the MAP test for grades 2 through 5. So those norms are a little kind of varied.
Mm-hmm.
They also try to use within the norming sample a lot of the data that would reflect kind of national data around poverty levels and student-teacher ratio to kind of get some of those comparisons. So anyway, when Nancy first ran these reports and saw this, she's like, what, you know, kind of what's going on? And we're trying to kind of explain it. So we actually contacted NWA and we asked them to, so if you kind of look at, so this is the percent of students who met their growth target fall to fall. Now this is not fall to spring. And, you know, we were pretty close, and then all of a sudden, this is what had happened. So NWA suggested that you rerun your old last 2 years of data against the 2011 norm so that you're comparing apples to apples. And you can see it made a huge difference at first grade. Not a significant difference at the other grade levels, but the new norms are having a slight impact. I anticipate another impact next year when they add new Common Core questions as well. So you're kind of getting a little bit away from your trend data. And it will be interesting to see what happens this year when we find that kids all have very similar growth targets. Teachers are really struggling, just a small group I met with this afternoon, because it's just so foreign to them, and trying to kind of wrap their head around it. They were, you know, in their mind, our high kids will never meet these 8 or 9 points, and, you know, new norms, like, and we've kind of talked through it. So, so again, that's fall to fall, as opposed to fall to spring. Here's our median written math and math. It's exactly what we would expect to see. Again, that cohort, so it's individual kids each year. And then here's that math growth and math versus the district scorecard data. So you've got a couple of groups who have surpassed that target
to the sixth,
already.
The sixth grade did.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So what was the highest eighth grade rep? What was the highest running school this year?
This year?
Yeah.
We had a little fifth grader who had a 250.
Oh, wow.
I got an email from the teacher. What's the highest you can go?
Is there a prize?
But again, one of the things when we did our math testing this year is right away, I just kind of mentioned they realigned it with Common Core, that kind of thing. Well, teachers immediately said, oh, it's so much harder. And it was not because they added new Common Core questions, but by adding more questions at that higher end, you know, they may have only had a handful of questions, let's say, at a 260 range. They felt like they needed to add more to kind of really kind of spread that out a little bit. Who is at that 260? Who can go higher? That kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So again, here's what that fall-to-fall percentages and measure growth targets. The first 2 years are using the 2008 norms. The third year is now using the 2009 norms. And they said you see your biggest discrepancies at your first and second grade and on an individual basis for those kids at the high end. You can see what happens to second grade. This is when it was recalculated. Mm-hmm. And it evens out a little bit at some of the other grades. Not significant, but and again, our percentage of kids meeting your growth targets is high compared to generally what other grades. So some of what we're really kind of doing right now is, well, immediately will probably help teachers kind of understand these changes in the growth targets and what that might mean as they approach conferences, because the results are shared at parent-teacher conferences as well. But we'll continue to monitor kind of the information from the state to see if we, what kind of changes there might be with the ISET test and the AYTs. You know, and I think you've heard it too. If things continue as they are, they've predicted, I think, almost every district in the state of Illinois would be on the watch list or whatever because they did not commit to use AYP. We'll continue to monitor information from PARC. PARC is the Partnership for Assessment of Readiness for College and Careers. And this is the kind of assessment consortium that Illinois is aligned to as part of the new Common Core. They release draft frameworks, and the frameworks are kind of a guide to districts to tell us kind of what they'll be assessing at what point along those new assessments. They talked about releasing sample test questions. We don't have them yet. We were also supposed to get the new science Common Core standards this year, and they've already been delayed to December of 2012. Continue to work with the teachers on using the math data to inform their instruction. I think goal setting's got a couple of buildings where I'm having the teachers do math goal setting specifically this time around. We are implementing the new Illinois Learning Standards incorporating the Common Core in literacy. The specialists are working with teachers to get that ongoing professional development support, as well as for the Institute Days. We just did an Institute Day of Common Formative Assessments, and the teachers worked with the Common Core with that. And in March, we're looking at doing a whole thing on grammar because there's a whole new shift and emphasis on grammar in the new Common Core. We're going to be working on creating some district benchmark assessments in literacy using the Common Core. We've got a focus group we're starting in November. The math group is really working on these next two things. Jeannie's here too, she can attest to it. We're really kind of creating these great tasks. They're highly demanding cognitive problems that the grade levels will work on by trimester, kind of give us feedback. And we'll be rolling those out this next month and then kind of processing it. And we're really kind of redoing our, realigning the curriculum to the Common Core for implementation next year. But I would say right now I'm fairly confident that Everyday Math will continue to be kind of that common core curriculum. They're identifying lessons to help supplement where they've seen some gaps that we continue to access. But and as you know, Jeannie would tell you, probably where we're most concerned from a curriculum perspective is at the junior high, because it's more procedural, really, as opposed to kind of applying those mathematical principles and things like that, and moving towards the target of algebra for all by eighth grade. So that's another kind of implication for us, and how is that going to look as we kind of backwards map that into the elementary schools as well. So we'll start to see some changes and some implications for that. And then implementing kind of the new curriculum in ELL and bilingual, and then the special ed interventions and progress monitoring around that to target those subgroups. And then, you know, I think the work of the think tank as well, and even foreign language, you know, what we're studying in that, and you know, the research around that, the academic benefits that we see for all kids. And I'll kind of be bringing an update around that to everyone probably in September.
Sure. Can I just say, how does the Explore test fit into any? I mean, it's another one of our tests that the kids take. Does that have any connection to any of these other assessments that we do?
It's meaningful for the high school, and but I will tell you though, the high school is doing a math test. So
really,
yes,
very nice to hear.
And it's at ninth grade. All of their ninth graders, I believe, are taking it. I don't know if they're gonna extend it to 10th grade, but so you know, I kind of reminded the eighth grade teachers, let the kids know that this math test is, you know, going to continue to be important, and they still look at that as part of that placement. But they use Explore, Plan, and ACT to kind of monitor and see that kids are progressing. There's, I think, always been a disconnect between those and ISAT and Prairie State. The new Common Core standards, though, are aligned to college and career readiness, which is ACT. So,
but that Explore test is just a recommendation.
No, and I understand.
You can sign up for whatever you want in high school.
And that's my understanding, but as a district who relies on data, and we, you know, and I'm being facetious about the math test because, you know, some have still struggled with the math test, I think that demonstrates once again that we are, you know, using testing that they use in the high school, that what we're doing for the kids and the progression and the growth is carried into the high school. It doesn't end in eighth grade and you never see it again. You're going to see that, just like standards-based report cards are something that are here to stay. They're not a newfangled idea. And with the Explore test, it's like the kids go and take this test on a Saturday morning. What connection does it have to anything that we do? And if it has no connection, shouldn't there be something better that we're using or that the high school uses? Or
It is a very useful test for the high school. Useful test. The whole sequence of Explore, Plan, ACT is a great predictor. We have been receiving the Explore data for the last couple of years, and we look at it. I mean, we've never, previous to a couple of years ago, we didn't look at Explore at all, but I think now we're looking at it a little more closely, almost as an exit exam. You know, where in those areas that are identified, transitions for, what do they call it, transitions for something, they break out their standard areas. And we can look, how did our students perform in those areas that, you know, it's informing kind of backwards, but...
Well, and that, I guess that's kind of my point, because...
It is a transition.
Are we doing, you know, if we've had that discussion where... Fifth grade is about preparing them to go to Hadley. Eighth grade is sort of about making sure they have what they need to go to high school. And does that Explore test give us that kind of information? Does it, you know, reaffirm or maybe help guide some of the decisions, curriculum-based decisions that might be made at the middle school level for high school readiness? Because they really, I mean, we can't, I know with the GEC, the Glen Ellyn Consortium Group, that is one of the things that you have done to make sure that we're all doing the same things and that they're ready for high school. But it's just one more piece of information that you know, we should use and be able to say we use it for this, and this, and we did get those results, and we need to tweak this, or we're doing a good job of that to get the kids right.
Yeah, and Nancy has started to kind of try and say, you know, can we make any kind of correlation to where they are in math, ISAT, and explore. And you have to make a choice. You can use 7th grade ISAT, and then they take the explore test in October. That was in March. Or 8th grade, which is the following March. It's not a perfect alignment. Where your math at fall to fall, you feel like it might be a slightly better alignment. Mm-hmm. So that's one of the... And so she's just done kind of some basic and what it might mean.
Just curious, because
it's definitely a high school test.
Mm-hmm. Is there a... The assumption I'm making here is that we view math as a higher standard and a better way to measure our kids' progress. Is that a true statement than the ISAT or not a true statement? Are they just two so different to measure different things?
Well, I would say they're different. I guess what I value about math is that because it's adaptive, kids can get beyond grade level. And an ISAT test, you know, whether it's a great test or not, was very specific to...
So if you exceed, you just exceed your grade. You don't,
right.
It doesn't tell you your 3 grades. Or
right. And after what I heard on Monday, it kind of feel like meets and exceeds is somewhat arbitrary by the state as well. So,
And the reason I'm asking that is, I guess I've always assumed that math was probably more... where we should focus our energy around growth and measures growth. You can actually validate it because you get it in the year that you're teaching, not now.
Correct.
So under that assumption, when I look to see that, you know, call it 30-38% of the kids aren't meeting the growth targets, is there something that the teachers need, or that you need, or, you know, what is it that we could do to try to improve those scores and do better? Is it, do they need more time? Is it, have you thought through that, or is it just...
I would say, I think the buildings are now taking a more systematic approach to that. I think, individual teachers have invested maybe different levels of kind of work with this, and now I know of two buildings for sure who said we're all going to do goal setting around math, as opposed to kids have been doing goal setting, but it may not have been specific to an actual math score. So
if I remember the math, it was if I'm at this level, then it gives the teacher some recommendations of, hey, this student needs to work on decimal point placement and write these kind of things. Right. We're not moving to a culture of teaching to the test. We're moving to a culture of saying, here's needs, they're identified, and let's work towards those. Right?
I think that's another piece that we value about math, is it gives teachers the instructional level of students and allows them to adapt. And so, as Karen said, we have schools that are now setting goals with their teachers based on their math results and how do they want to move students, and having students set more serious goals based on their math results so that they can monitor their own growth.
So are we implementing this properly? I mean, do we feel we've got the right resources and measurements, KPIs, whatever, around making sure that we're looking at these scores and the needs and that's part of the curriculum? I don't know if a teacher has 25 kids and, four of them are over here, 3 are here. I mean, is it realistic, or should we be shuffling kids around? Is it realistic?
Well, some teachers explore with that, particularly in their targeted learning time. We've seen a couple grade levels experiment with looking at their math scores and shuffling students around math. So we're seeing more of that based on the collaboration time that they now have. So between having the data and having the time, and having the expectation that they're using data to make instructional decisions, I think we're seeing changes. I'll tell you one thing that a grade level did last year and presented at CIT was they looked at all of the students that didn't make their growth targets and then charted by how many points. and found that predominantly kids were just shy of having met their growth target. But you either make it or you don't. So they may have been 1 or 2 points off. And the students that were significantly off or showed very little growth, you know, those were areas then they wanted to really look at. Why did this child not grow to the extent that they did? So I think we're seeing more of that drilling down beyond the data that we share with you even.
And they have a resource called ACARD, and I've told teachers too, you know, share it with parents, you know, because it does get more down to basic skills within those RIC bands. You know, parents want to know how to help their child, you know, go ahead and give it to them, because it will give it. We've got the vocabulary that NWA uses, the teachers all have that, just so to kind of be aware, mm-hmm. because they may not be calling some things exactly what we might refer to it as. A simple example is they call it word root. We've always called it root word. Now, most kids are going to figure out that it's the same thing, but you're going to have some kids are going to be like, I wonder if that, or they're not saying it's root word. I mean, just because, you know, and you find when kids who are at that high end, they almost want to, you know, argue with the question, you know, a little bit as they're trying to solve it. And I mean, it's just what kids do sometimes.
What did you call that the teacher should show?
Descartes.
I mean, it's hundreds of pages, so, you know, they have to, it takes a lot of time for them to be able to find the one that's targeted to individual children.
And is that something that a parent can go do on their own?
I would have to check. There's a whole parent toolkit on NWA, and Descartes might be there. But you know what? We can put it on our website as well. So, and it's just where you kind of look up by where your child's RIC score is. But it's a huge, huge document. And it is time intensive for teachers to really go, you know, I've got kids in this RIC band, so these are the pages this parent would need. And, but it is.
Any other questions for Karen?
I'm not sure, Karen, or you. But, you know, we had this, so we went into the choice this year because of the one group at Churchill. There's other things that happen if you don't get out of choice. What is the next thing we would see happen with that group? And does it happen in a year, 2 years?
Supplemental services, the next step of the process, and in supplemental service it means that you need to use Title I dollars or district resources to provide students who did not meet tutoring services, and you have to use an approved vendor from the state. So you can't hire your own teachers to do an after-school tutoring club. Although they may have loosened that a little bit. I'd have to go back and look at exactly what the parameters are now for supplemental services. That's the next level. After that, it's a system of support where a team comes into your school and starts to work to try and improve those scores. And then the ultimate, which I think is at 8 years of not making adequate yearly progress, it could be a reorganization of the school.
So the
by then, NCLB will be over, hopefully.
That's what I was wondering, how much longer.
Well, we have till 2014, and you know, Karen alluded to not having ISAT. The state of Illinois has indicated that it will apply for a waiver, just as it is interested in applying for Race to the Top dollars. And the waiver has certain parameters around it that the state must agree to. Which they plan on doing, and I'm not even clear about what all those waivers are, what the requirements are, but they're very similar to what Race to the Top parameters were. The problem is they don't even see that being implemented until 2014. So they can apply for a waiver, and in the final year of NCLB might be awarded that waiver. In the meantime, you know, every school in your district becomes pretty much a family school.
Yeah. Back to a longer school day, who's getting tutoring after school?
Well.
And what does the Fed, do they kick in dollars for that?
No. No, you remember the only school that would be required to do that is Churchill. And they would expect that you would use your resource that they've given you to help address students in poverty.
now has to be used for busing and supplemental services. And so whatever you were doing with that money prior, you're going to have to find a way to provide that. So for us, it's reading assistance.
Did we ever get an answer to if all our buildings failed?
Then you have to ask, well, then you ask neighboring districts where they have schools that are not failing. If you can send your children to them.
And they'll say no.
Okay. They'll say no. Of course they say no. We say no every year to multiple
inquiries.
And then,
right?
So we can't find a school district.
Then you have to just...
They have to go there.
They have to go there.
But it's a full district of open choice, right?
If all of your schools were failing, you'd have no choice, you know, other than to go outside your district hope that someone would take you in.
So then they have to stay at the school, or we can say we can stay.
So let's not waste our time with the ISAC. We'll all skip it next year, fail, and we'll all stay here.
Karen, thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
One other, I don't know if this is ISAC, but, you know, in terms of the math, I know we've got Karen here. The eighth graders, the seniors in high school now who are the first class of geometry, have we gotten any feedback on how they're doing now as seniors? Is there a full multivariate calculus class? How many of them were the juniors in Calc AB or BC? How did they do on the AP test? I'm just curious if we keep sending more eighth graders in geometry, what results are we tracking in high school now that it's a good thing or not? Do we have any data on that?
Do you have an opinion or do you have data?
The only data we have is from BioBoards with us in the beginning of the year, and was quite disappointed that a lot of kids did not opt to take the multivariable test.
Well, from what I was told, it was basically a correspondence course.
It
was a problem.
I think,
and there was no college credit because they had to do it as a correspondence course.
That's, of course, the District 87 issue,
right,
rather,
yeah,
than our issue. But when we look at the data we do get back from District 87 on how our students are performing, they're doing very well.
Really, correspondence course.
They log on to a virtual classroom with a university.
But they don't get credit for college.
But they don't get college for credit for it. Some school districts have worked that out.
The college that offered it or something, but will do anything for the...
Well, no, it may not transfer if the student doesn't go to. Yeah.
But I was just curious, because now that, I mean, how many eighth grade geometry classes do we have now? Two again? Two or one?
One.
Just one.
It's more students.
Small, and the next two will be
one. It's been one the last 3 years.
It will be one. It's just that this one is at 14. But the coming up, there's from 7th grade to 8th grade.
Oh, there's 2 7th grade and then 1 8th grade, usually?
No.
Oh,
no, okay. No, not yet.
You're saying the 7th graders coming into 8th
grade
taking
geometry. Right now it's class of 14. We're looking at it should be a class of almost 20 to 25 next year, and that if ideally everyone stays in it, it will be
looking for 20 to 25, because that's the number of kids you want to put in the classroom, because that's the number of kids that can take it.
That's the number of kids who qualify to take it.
Qualify.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's why this year's only got 14.
Well, it's just one data point, but that class seems to have helped a lot for a kid that I know that's in my school.
Good. So that's good.
No, I think, I was just curious. You know, I see, I don't know how many juniors took Calc AB or BC, or which do they normally all go into BC then, or have you tracked that at all now that you've had that one class?
We did track for a while until multivariable was here. What the kids were doing was taking AB and BC. They were doing
them. Oh, I see. Okay. Thanks. Sorry.
That's it. Okay. We're ready to move on?
All right.
Our consent agenda. Are there any items board members would like removed from the consent agenda to be considered separately? Hearing none, may I have a motion?
Oh, I was going to say that when we went down there.
Oh, okay.
Is that all right? May I have a motion to approve the consent agenda as presented, which includes human resources, personnel report, and employment recommendations. Item 2, finance, facility and operations, treasurer's report, investment schedule, monthly revenue, expenditure summary report, summary of bills and payroll, the school district payment order, and if you can pull that out, that's one of your blue sheets. And I want to note that this reflects an updated dollar amount only in the October interim account, so the sum of $1,430,440.15 is a corrected amount from our original. Vandalism or damage report, disposal of surplus property, the 2011-2012 FOIA report, and other matters including board meeting minutes from the October 11th, 2011 regular meeting.
Second.
Roll call, please.
Yes.
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 Yes. Yes. Item B, the superintendent's recommendation. iPad pilot rollout. At its October 11, 2011 regular meeting, the board discussed the administration's recommendation to pilot iPad tablets as part of the district's long-range technology plan. As part of this pilot, the administration recommends purchasing 140 iPads from Apple at approximately $538 per unit, for a total cost of $75,320. The administration is further recommending the purchase of 5 HP laptop storage carts at a cost of $1,200 each, for a total of $6,000. May I have a motion to approve the administration's recommendation as presented?
Motion.
Discussion.
Second.
I'm sorry, second.
Second.
Discussion. I think we heard everything last week.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Roll call.
Mr. Bondurant?
Yes.
Mr.
Bauer?
Yes.
Mr. Black?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mr. Smith?
Yes.
Mr. Bender?
Yes.
Mr. Nelson?
Yes. Item 2, the elementary school social studies netbook rollouts. At its October 11, 2011 regular meeting, the board discussed the administration's recommendation to purchase 175 netbooks from Heartland Business Systems through a fair market value 3-year lease with American Capital at an annual cost of $25,786 or a total 3-year cost of $77,358. The extended 3-year warranty for the netbooks will be an annual cost of $13,300 with an estimated 3-year expenditure of $39,086. Additionally, 8 storage carts will be purchased with a total cost of $9,600. Please note that the board report distributed this evening, our other blue paper report, is different from the board report members received in their packets. The report in front of you contains updated information on the cost per unit. Mike Wood negotiated a $14 discount per unit, bringing the cost down from $475 per unit to $459 per unit, for a total 3-year lease cost of $77,358. May I have a motion to approve the administration's recommendation as presented?
Motion.
Second?
Second.
Discussion.
I just want to make a note that Mike actually negotiated this reduction just this last weekend based on some information that he had acquired in just doing some additional research. So,
kudos to Mike. Any other discussion? All right. Roll call, please.
Mrs. Howell?
Yes.
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 Yes. Superintendent's report.
You know, I'm just going to be very brief because I know we have a lot yet remaining for discussion this evening. And so I just want to give kudos to Bob, who last winter after our big storm, we were eligible for some FEMA dollars that required a great deal of paperwork and a great deal of extra work on his part, but the result for us was a $29,955.61 reimbursement for our costs that we incurred, which were about $45,000 last year. So, yeah, good
Thank
job in recouping some of that.
Thanks, Bob. Got it?
Yes, okay. Board reports.
I was unable to attend LLT, however, I can report, thanks to Karen and her team. LLT, a big thing that came out of LLT was the discussion about the foreign language planning grant that the district received in the spring, and a group was formed, and they're formed, and with District 41 staff, they're reviewing the research on elementary foreign language programs, including immersion and traditional weekly programs. The research shows there, you know, obviously there's academic benefits to that, and we all know, have said, as we've said a number of times even tonight, that foreign language in our classrooms is something that this board feels very strongly about. So they're going to be doing some site work, or going to some different sites to evaluate those programs, and we'll perhaps be looking for volunteers to do that, and they'll send it out. And then just kind of planning the rest of the meetings.
Okay. Any other board reports?
I attended the October 19th PTA meeting. There was a couple presentations. Jeff Voigt from West talked about mm-hmm. the Explore Test. And I don't need to add anything other than what was already said tonight, except for the fact that Mr. Voigt said that Hadley, of all the feeder schools, Hadley consistently has the highest scores on this test. So we could all pat ourselves on the back for that. There was another presentation by, I believe she's an eighth grade teacher, Hillary Shoemate, about a kind of a retreat sort of thing for mothers and girls in grades 6 through 8, and she calls it Powerful, Outstanding Women, and she gave a nice report about it, and is going to pursue the funding through the PTA itself to try to get it off the ground and see if she can get something involved with that.
Okay.
That's it.
Just a couple things. Dan and I met this past Friday to discuss the second board goal on communication, development and active community engagement plan, .. So the goal states that we'll engage in three activities by the end of the school year, June 2012. So I'm going to defer to Dan for a minute and let him just give a quick update on what we talked about.
We talked about the three different topics, and we did some brainstorming on targeted groups for improved different communication. We did some filtering on those to see where that kind of fell out. And then from there, we're going to be talking about the
The goal?
Yeah, the last two goals was...
That we were going to focus on identifying what these three engagement activities would be.
That's right. The three activities.
Yeah. That's right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we're going to meet a second time, and then we agreed to flesh out a proposal for the rest of the board so you could take a look at it and then give your input, and then we'll move from there. So thanks again to Dan for doing that. As part of the communication goal, I spoke with Julie and Ann at a president's meeting, I think in September, about initiating a link on the D41 website for a president letter, just as another way to do some summary and from the board to the community. So I want to thank Julie for superb editing and guidance, and focus this month on our district's culture of care bullying prevention, since October is National Anti-Bullying Month, so that was a nice connection. And I also included our board goals, I think that's a nice alignment with what Dan and I want to present to the board, and we can get that kicked off hopefully in before the end of this calendar year. We'll see. So that's posted, and I think Julie said she was going to put on e-news so that
it's out.
Yeah, is it out? Yeah. Oh, lovely. Mm-hmm. There you go. So hopefully I was relatively straightforward with Julie's editing. And then lastly, CIT was last Thursday, October 20th, and we had updates from the learning leadership team, the professional development team. I want to focus on that out of all this for just a second, because they reported Kathy Maxson on the Support Staff Institute Day, which is also October 11th with our Teacher Institute, and spoke about designing many learning opportunities for the staff. And I know that there's been just significant improvement over the last 3-4 years under PDT with opportunities for our staff members. So Karen presented on the Common Core, which I think is really important so that staff are versed in what their counterparts in terms of teachers are doing. There's a technology opportunity, IMRF presentation, and Julie So that was PDT. At CIT, Julie also Worthen facilitated a focus group to identify positive core attributes for the district. And this is going to replicate itself in different focus groups around the district. I know PTA Council is going to be doing one. Okay. And so that data is going to be pulled together to identify what are those identified positive attributes of the district that we can start to build on and use as part of our messaging. So it was a really interesting conversation experience, and I want to thank Julie. I think she did a really nice job of setting that up for us and having us participate.
And that's part of goal four, the long-range plan around ambassadorship.
Ambassadorship, right. So that was good. So very good meeting. Thank you.
I have another plea for a someone to cover for me on the 27th.
Is that for CERC?
Yeah. I'll be out of town on a work-related trip, so I received some responses. Thank you.
Sorry about that.
And I would check with them, because last year when I was on CERC, on the CERC rotation, they had no expectation for us to speak. And I mean, it was one of those things where I was like, we're here to talk, and they didn't need it. So you might want to check with them and find out, because Jen Law is there. And so if there is something, but that might, I know we're present, but. Mm-hmm.
Who's there,
sir? The
general director of student services. Yeah.
So you just might want to check, because they might not have an expectation.
Yeah. It's certainly an excellent opportunity for board members to hear those presentations.
Right.
We've talked about them before, too.
I've had one.
Yeah, Tina Terrace, right. Any other? Okay.
Yes, I attended the PTA Glen Ellyn Council meeting, District Number 36. This morning from 9:30 to 11:30, and we covered many things. We had some local unit reports where Kier Sherl reported that they had their first crazy hair day, and they had someone from Anderson Books, who was a singer, who came by, whose name I'm too old to even know who it was, but everyone was very excited about it. Forest Glen, a couple of the highlights from them was their chess club is up and running. They've got good membership this year. They started a knitting club at lunch, and they had to turn some people away. It's been so popular. They had a walk to school day, and I think some other schools had that as well, and that was very successful. One of the interesting discussions was that great books they're considering replacing with a good old-fashioned book club and or a battle of the books or both. Hadley also had an interesting idea that they're pursuing around some programs for empowering girls and how they see themselves.
The POW, John.
That's what he just reported on.
Yeah, that was one of them. That's it. That was also discussed. That was interesting and a good idea. They also talked about, they had the standing committee reports and a couple things to note. The cultural arts program has a what they call a cultural lunch, where they have a college student from COD come and play an instrument during lunch. Mm-hmm. And the kids get to ask questions, and they said we've gotten really good response from that, and the kids seem to enjoy it. They also, I thought was interesting, talked about how there's some research that's been done around volunteering, and that you shouldn't volunteer in your kids' class. You should do it and volunteer in other kids' class. So they had an interesting discussion around that. And then CERC brought up a few points. They were, they were as positive as they wanted as they could be, and they wanted to remain positive, but felt that there were still some inconsistencies across the district in terms of each of the schools, and transition planning from one grade to the next, and specifically, from K through 5 to Hadley, still needed some work. My overall takeaways from this morning's meeting was I thought it was worthwhile going to, and I felt I saw some innovation going on at the PTA level that I felt was good. And I'm still a little unsure about why they seem to meet some of the needs of our teachers in the classroom in terms of supplies and items that they need in the classroom, and I'm still a little perplexed why we're not doing that and, you know, not providing what the teachers need. So that perplexed me a little bit.
We provide everything the teachers need. That certainly would be above and beyond what they need if they're enriching something. The resources our teachers, I think if you were to ask any teacher, district has provided significant resources to them. I think that particular PTA said they had money and they're not supposed to maintain money. And so they just gave it to teachers, you know, to say, get what you want. So we don't have an unlimited supply of digital cameras. We don't have an unlimited supply of certain resources that when given the opportunity, teachers may buy more of them.
That's good to hear. I just want to make sure
The PTAs are not fulfilling what I would consider fundamental needs of classrooms in terms of supplies or resources.
Like the Lombard, you know, when they submit stuff to
PEP.
PEP grants, you know. Mm-hmm.
So overall, very good meeting.
Thank you,
Jim. Thank you for inviting me.
Anything else? Okay. Discussion items. No items of discussion scheduled for tonight's meeting. Upcoming meetings of the board include November 14th, 2011, regular board meeting, 7:30 p.m. at Forest Glen. November 28th, 2011, regular board meeting, 7:30 p.m. here at the Central Services Office. Are there any other matters to be considered by the board? All right, thank you. Public participation. Are there any members of the public who wish to address the board at this time? Public people. Adjourn to closed session. The board has determined it has a need to adjourn to closed session to discuss the following matters. The appointment, employment, compensation, discipline, performance, or dismissal of specific employees of the district or legal counsel for the district, including hearing testimony on a complaint lodged against an employee or against legal counsel for the district to determine its validity. Item 2, the purchase or lease of real property for the use of the district, including meetings held for the purpose of discussing whether a particular parcel should be acquired. Litigation, when an action against, affecting, or on behalf of a particular district has been filed and is pending before a court or administrative tribunal, or when the district finds that an action is probable or imminent, in which case the basis for the finding shall be recorded and entered into the closed session meeting. The board will not be taking action when it returns to open session. Motion to adjourn.
Motion.
Second. Roll call.
Mr. Black?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mr. Smith?
Yes.
Mr. Kavanaugh?
Yes.
Mr. Donner?
Yes.
Mr. Howard?
Yes. Yes.